great to be back, and it's great to have all of you back. This is the 327th. Yep, that's right. 327 plus hours of doing this.
I need a vacation.
327th episode. I'm glad to have you back. We're going to have a great discussion. You wouldn't even believe it's 327 because we just keep on trucking. I do appreciate you joining us this week. If you are new by any chance, we do have a Christian-specific segment. That will be roughly the halfway point of the show. I do set it separate. So, you know, if that just... I always like to joke around and kind of quasi-joke around, you know. If you're so put off by that, them spirits on you so put off by it that you can't stand it, I put it away so your spirits won't get all upset. In all seriousness, though, give it a shot. Even if that's not your usual thing, give it a shot. Check it out. Multiple people have told me they're not even really into Christianity, but they actually enjoy that part of the show. You think of it as a motivational speech or not. It may not be real, maybe kind of not motivational. I don't know. But anyway, there it is. You can listen to it. You can not. And honestly, I don't care if you do or not. So that is up to you. But there it is. It's offered. You can or you can't. That's all on you. And that's all I'm required to do. I have stayed in contact with Sven, by the way. He is still doing fine. Not a lot more I can say than that. There's not a lot to report. He's chugging along doing his thing. Looking forward to the time when he's completely off all of this probation, what we would call it probation parole here. They have a different term for it there, but the time is a-coming. When he's going to be off of all that. I'm looking forward to it more than anybody. You have no idea how much I'm looking forward to that. If you do get something out of this show, I do have and you want to put something in the plate, I got the snail mail. That's what I got. You got to go to the description page here, right here for the show. If you're playing the show on Radio Albion, it's my understanding some other people put them up on different, puts these shows up on different platforms. You just come to RadioAlbion.com, look at the Parish of the Patriots, click on the show, and go down through the description, which probably nobody reads. And down at the bottom of that, you'll see the snail mail address. That's what I got. Forget those crypto addresses. Those aren't mine. I have nothing to do with that. That's Sven's stuff from before he left. That's what I got. I got snail mail. Nothing at all. So with that, with that having been said, we do have listener supporter mailbag, and we had a drought there for a few weeks. GPD. I was a little let down by your response to my last letter concerning the love of God. Let me see here. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I got a little tongue-tied. I'm sorry. Anyway, with that having been said, in the love of Christ, that's from CJ. Now, I did read everything in between here, CJ. Obviously, I'm not going to read three pages on the show here. And, you know... Everything you wrote here is pretty good stuff. I'll be honest. I don't even remember what I said. It is what it is. Yeah, you know, I'm on 327. I've said a lot of stuff. I don't remember saying what more than likely happened. I have a suspicion. And no, I'm not going to go back through 327 shows to find the one I talked about. More than likely, I didn't even answer whatever was said because I get off my train of thought goes out here and I go off on these tangents. And then by the time I'm done with something that I thought was really interesting, I don't even realize I never addressed what somebody asked in the first place. Hey, that's how it is, man. That's how I roll. So I'm rolling for 327 episodes. Don't take offense by it. It's just how I do. It's not because I don't think y'all stuff is important. I get off on tangents and you know, it is what it is. GPD, what do you know about Stu Peters? That's from Triangle Whip. Nothing. Literally. This show, I strive for brutal honesty. I don't know. I stay in contact with Sven, and he asked me the other day about somebody's podcasts and if they were, you know, what they're podcasting, you know, if they were still podcasting or whatever. And I don't have any idea. I tell Sven, I'm like, I don't listen to anybody's podcast. I don't listen to podcasts except for Dr. Johnson's. I listen to Matt's because it's interesting to me. first and foremost, and also because I kind of pretty much have to posting his stuff up here on the network. I go through there, you know, take care of the technical aspects, which Sven used to always do for us. So I do listen to Matt's. But that's it. Kidding me. Summer anime season's fixing to drop. Y'all think I'm going to sit around and listen to podcast? I ain't got time for all that. I better lose all the listenership. There won't be a 328 because everybody like, you know, that's all I can do. We have fun. Yeah. GPD. Yes, we have a third one this week. GPD, a little something to keep you out of the poorhouse. Rhetorical question. But if Jews are so smart, why can't they figure out what it is they're doing that causes people to hate them? All the best. That's from Peter. And, you know, it kind of goes back to what I was saying recently, you know, about understanding the concepts. I won't get preachy early here, but, you know, understanding the concepts of the bigger picture of this being a spiritual battle. In other words, a lot of us, they just can't help it. They just do what they do. Now, having said that, and yes, that does get us through the listener supporter mailbag. And I want to say again, I really do appreciate y'all. I kind of skip through. I make light here and we have some fun. But I do appreciate y'all who get enough out of it to take the time to drop something in there. It does mean a lot. The moral support of it means a lot. I'm recording this on Saturday, the 14th. Show will air on Tuesday. Now, as such, and that's my normal routine. I'll record Saturday, sometimes Sunday, but usually on Saturday, and then it'll go up on Tuesdays. And this is why I usually stay away from whatever the hottest new topic in the news is, because the show airs on Tuesday, and that's going to be 3 days old, basically, by the time, you know, from the time I record to the time it airs. But we're not going to do that today. We're going to go away. I'm going to go ahead and talk about some of the stuff that's going on today, because I got to fill up the time before the Christian specific segment with something. Why not talk about that? Now, it'd be easy. And I myself take that route too. It's real easy to not do that and wait till after everything is kind of played out and then run out there and talk about it and act like you knew that was the way it was all the time. And I, like I said, I ain't talking about anybody in particular out there. I've done the same thing. That's easy. That's a safe route. You know, it ain't the safe route. What I'm going to do today, I'm sitting here on a Saturday. I'm going to talk about this stuff and something completely may play out completely different by the time the show airs. And I look like a dumbass and I don't even care. Doesn't bother me to be wrong. Wouldn't be the first time. Won't be the last. We're going to talk about it. Of course, the big happenings, we got two big happenings and I'm going to kind of talk about them parallel because they are related. I do believe they are related. We get into the serious part of the discussion now. We're done with my frivolities, my frivolousness, and making light of things. We're going to get down to serious business here. There are two things going on right now. So I'm recording this show. One, of course, is the Israel-Iran thing. And the other are these ongoing ICE protests, which are just some most fake and gay shit ever. And yet people falling for it. And today's the 14th. Supposedly now these totally organic protests are spreading to other cities. They never tell us spread by who. And supposedly we could have all these big happenings. Why they're going to do these protests all over, even in smaller towns, not just the big cities. They. Who are they? Who's paying for this shit? I thought Doge shut down all that USAID money. Where's this money coming from? People talk about billionaires. A lot of people in these protests are talking about it's some woman that's the heir to Walmart or some shit. She's the one. We know this because some rando on the internet says so. I figured something out with the Doge stuff on the USAID money and all that. Because people talk about George Soros. And I think George Soros is probably already dead. They just haven't told us. You know, kind of like I think the Pope died sometime before they finally told us he died. I think George Soros is probably already dead. They're just not telling us. And maybe people are trying out. You know, these different billionaires are trying out to be the new supervillain. Klaus Schwab is sort of kind of retiring, I think. We're going to have a new comic book tier villain to be the face of this shit nobody likes. But the Walmart woman, she's trying out. She's the best. But one of the things I figured out from the George Soros and that some of the stuff for the Doge thing, I figured out that these people being rich has nothing to do with it because they're using government money. And George Soros is using his billions. And turned out he wasn't. He was using government money. They take money from us to pay for crap that we don't like. Imagine that. And these guys got billions of dollars. They ain't even spending their own money. They're getting that government money to turn around and do all of this. And people still talking about, well, oh, who's or why are they doing this? Where are people at these people out there protesting? So, yeah, supposedly. I see some normie, because I look at all kinds of stuff. You know, I was saying a while ago, you know, I have pretty disinterested in things like politics and all, or I'm sorry, podcasts and everything. And that kind of reflects my current level of disinterest in politics in general, because it's all theater, which come to realize this is all staged bullshit and theater. I'm not interested anymore. It's not even an interesting show, but that doesn't mean I don't check in to see what other people think. And there's any number of normie conservatives out there who are doing this. I saw a deal just last night, and this guy was, you know, talking about, you know, we're arming up. I tell you, these people are going to come pull their crap. If they come to my town, I'm cocked, locked, and ready to rock, buddy. So you're going to go shoot up the protest? I mean, I don't even know what they're saying. I mean, I guess they're implying that if they start burning buildings down, they're going to go down with their guns and start shooting them. When I see people make these statements, I think to myself, have you actually thought through what that's going to look like, or, you know, how that plays out? You know, I mean, I understand. Don't get me wrong. I understand defending your property and things such as that. You know, I doesn't get any more American than that. But, I mean, what are you saying? You're going to go down to the protest and stand across the street with your AR? Make sure they don't get out of line? That can't happen. That is kind of funny, I guess, but I don't know. You know, at what point are you setting yourself up for an agent provocateur to be in your midst and they fire off a rifle and then everybody looking at you? They make it look like you done it. People don't think through this stuff. They're naive. Conservatives are the worst because they hadn't been through it like a lot of other people have. I'm ready to go. I saw one person commenting, they were talking about how they is a Vietnam vet. So we got boomerism going here. And, you know, if these people try to go down and vandalize the local Vietnam War statue, this person says, I'm ready. I mean, you're ready? What? You're going to go shoot them? It's all theater. I know this stuff's all theater, but I mean, it's really, people should stop and think through what they're saying, what they're posting online. I'm ready to go and do what? Do you understand where that line is crossed when you're going to be legally able to justify using deadly force? You know, they tried to graffiti the Vietnam statue, so I shot them with my AR. I'm sorry, that's not going to cut it. You know, I mean, you're going to put your fate in the hand of jurors who, you know, looking at the pool of humanity, the odds are you're going to get 12 people and 10 or 11, if not all 12 of them, are going to be emotional dumbasses. And you're going to put your entire life in their hands. I'm going to get a, because you ain't going to get a jury of your peers. You think you're going to get a jury of fellow patriots who are incensed that they were going to graffiti the Vietnam Memorial? So they're going to let you off for shooting them. You're going to get probably 11 or 12 dumbasses who are emotional, and they're going to hear the story about how the person you shot is just the best person in the world, and you're just an evil hater. You're going to ruin. I don't like. See, I'm almost getting off on too many tangents here. Reel it back in. I don't like the people sit there and talk about, you know, spit this stuff out without thinking through, you know, without thinking it through. Just going down there. And look, they don't realize that they encourage the ship. They don't realize that just making the conscious choice to A, take your rifle, and B, go down to the protest where there's likely to be a confrontation now, wearing your Trump hat and whatever, waving the American flag, you haven't done anything as far as, you know, initiating violence. But those decisions right there, you are already setting yourself up to where if a confrontation happens, everything that happens after that, even if you're totally justified in what you were doing, let me tell you what a lawyer is going to do, what a prosecutor is going to do. They're going to be hammering on the fact that you could have stayed home and everything would have been fine. But for some reason, you chose to go down there to confront those people and you chose to bring a gun with you, showing that you had the intent to initiate violent action. You put yourself in the situation. I'm not sitting here trying to encourage people to be cowardly and hide at home, but we're being real here. And again, I'm talking about these concerns. Y'all listen to this. Y'all know what I'm saying. I'm preaching to the choir with y'all. I know that. Y'all aren't dumbasses. I hope y'all don't ever think that I'm talking at you like you're dumbass. I get off on these things and I'm talking about these other people. Yeah, anyway. I see these normie conservative channels or the normie conservative channels that are trying to be edgy and they talking about stuff like this. And again, I'm thinking, you're either provoking people to make foolish decisions or you yourself are setting yourself up to make foolish decisions. Think it through. That's what's going to happen. Because reality is not your boomer conservative Facebook group. Okay? Like I said, if something happened and everything you did was justified, you're even a court. You're going to have a jury of 12 dumbasses, and you're going to have a prosecutor sitting there asking over and over why you chose to go down there in the first place and antagonize these people, and you brought a gun with you. Hell, that shows you were intending to shoot somebody. You took a gun. You see what I'm saying? Now, we're going to set that aside for a minute, and I will loop back to it, but that other big happening, Israel being Israel, it's kind of referenced back to the listener last listener note there. Israel being Israel, unprovoked attack on Iran. It's worth pointing out how many times I've had to read or hear the media talk about Russia's unprovoked full-scale invasion of the Ukraine, all of which is a lie, but I've had to listen to that. And then now Israel has literally attacked Iran again, unprovoked, no justification at all. And you look at how they're trying to lawyer talk it, you know. Well, it's complicated. Well, you know, because Iran this or Iran that. And now, of course, Iran has launched missiles back at Israel. And Israel, laughably, they like, oh, we shot down all of you. They video. They were telling their own people. Their government was telling their own people there in Israel. They were like, y'all don't you dare record any of the missiles falling and any of the destruction. Don't you dare. They came out and told their own citizens, don't record any of this shit. Of course, they are. People being people, they're going to record it and put it on their social media. And then the government turns around and they're like, we shot down all the missiles except for like three. And they just landed on some residential buildings. Come on now. And then they had the nerve. I think it was the Israeli defense minister. Had the nerve to come out after this counter strike by Iran. And he was like, they've crossed all the red lines. They've crossed red lines. It's on now. Like, you can picture him taking off that stupid little hat thing and then throwing it on the ground. It's on now, buddy. Israel fatigue is real worldwide. This is funny. And kind of, like I say, it kind of references the listener letter there in all seriousness, because what is happening here, or one of the elements of what I'm seeing happening here. Worldwide, generally speaking, worldwide, Israel fatigue is real. People are just really sick of Israel. The fact that our foreign policy, especially in the Middle East, is set by Israel. Everything, the whole tone is set by Israel. And you're getting this ever growing because, I mean, the core of actual citizen support of Israel in this country are boomers, are older people. And they're dying off. I seen one the other day, just the other day, driving around with this cringe sticker on the back. I've seen it before, you know, with one half of the sticker's the American flag. The other half is the Israel flag. And, you know, God bless and America always stands with Israel horseshit. But those people are old and they're dying off. There ain't none of that in the younger generation. They trying to pass that along, but Israel fatigue is real. We're sick of hearing about these people. We're sick. It's real. And yet the only place that's not evident, you know, because of course now the media does their best to ignore it. But the only place that's not evident is the political leadership in the U.S. especially, and in their vassal states in Western Europe. So you have this thing where everyone else is feeling Israel fatigue. And you have these politicians running out and just slobbering on these people. Just, oh my God, Israel. Trump came out and said, Israel's attack. This was before Iran sent some missiles back their way. Israel's attack was beautiful. It's very excellent. Very good. It's disgusting, man. And this is just, it just is highlighting how fake this entire system is. What they're doing is self-defeating in that it's continuing to delegitimize the system by which they exert all of this power. Oh, you know, because they control the politicians. I mean, yeah, they can yell anti-Semitic canard all they want to. But the fact that Israel, the AIPAC lobby and all of them own our politicians, that's not even up for debate anymore. Unless you're just a really low information person who thinks they're our greatest ally and God's chosen people, you know, everybody else has the fatigue. Everybody else gets it. And they just doubling down. The only people running around supporting this shit are the politicians. What does that tell you? Vote harder? And Trump trying to come out and talk about, oh, well, we didn't have anything to do with it. We didn't take part. Man, they using your bombs and your money. What you talking about? Which highlights that Israel isn't even a real country. It's not. Why? Israel's a unique thing. And again, this is something that doesn't get touched on ever in the mainstream media. But Israel isn't even a real country. Because I talk to people and they throw these terms around, you know. People that are critical of Israel. You particularly people on the left. And, you know, it's an apartheid fascist Nazi state or whatever the hell, you know, they throw these terms out as insults, you know, without thinking through. Y'all know I'm big on word definitions. What they're flailing around at, and it just turns into insult words instead of being able to articulate it. But I think they kind of sense the correct answer. They just don't know how to put it into words. Israel isn't a real country at all. Why? Because it relies on welfare from everybody else. Oh, yeah. I've seen people post on the internet, you know, Jews post on the internet, and they'll be like, we don't even want the American man. In fact, here in Israel, we don't like it because it gives the U.S. too much influence on what our government does. We wish we wouldn't even take that money. Well, quit taking it then. Why do you keep taking it? Because you got to. How much of the nation of Israel, the quote-unquote nation of Israel, how much of it was built with German reparation monies from World War II and the Holocaust? How much? How many billions and billions of dollars paid for your infrastructure? We saw that, you know, they put all these sanctions on Russia and Russia's economy because they actually produce things. Russia's economy actually has weathered that very well. I'm sure they felt some hits. I mean, be real, but you know their economy has done very well considering. If you were to put half that amount of sanction on Israel, the whole country would collapse. Hell, if you cut off American money and Western European money that props the damn thing up, it would collapse. The whole quote-unquote nation state of Israel functions on parasitism, which makes it ridiculous when Trump comes out and talks about, oh, well, we didn't participate in the attack. Yeah, you did, because you give them the money, you give them the bombs, you give them the weapons. It's a welfare state. When I hear older conservatives talk about, you know, and they get on one of these, you know, bitching about people on welfare, you know, yeah, these people ought to go get a job. I tell you what, these lazy people, and they're collecting welfare. How do you feel about Israel? They're God's chosen people and our greatest ally. They're the biggest welfare state. We could all get a check if we weren't, if our government wasn't sending it to Israel. It's the biggest welfare queen on the face of the planet. In fact, if you cut off its EBT card, Israel would collapse. They gotta have, they're propped up by outside. This is why I say it's a fake nation, because a real nation doesn't have to have that. It might help them prosper, but if you cut that off, as we've seen in the case with Russia, if you cut that off, they'll still continue to function as a nation. They might take an economic hit, but they'll continue to function because they have the ability to do that. Israel exists because it's propped up from outside, primarily by the U.S. The other countries are largely vassal states and just do what they're told. It ain't a real country, is my point. Now, I've had people, you know, out there being hysterical about this. This is, we're getting into World War III. Because, of course, everybody knows our, quote unquote, our politicians are going to do whatever Israel tells them to at the end of the day. That's obvious. Again, people have made the connection that this whole system is fake. They still talking about Trump this, Trump that, or the next elections or whatever. And then they turn around and resign themselves. Well, I guess we're going to have World War III because we're going to go fight Iran now. We. I'm not. We're going to go fight Iran now because they tacitly admit that the politicians are all bought and paid for by Israel. And yet they act like the system is real. The disconnect drives me crazy. I don't think that those hysterics are justified at this point. This is where I go out on a limb because a lot can happen before the show even airs and I can look like a dumbass. I don't care. I do think it's a little overblown and a few reasons for that. The initial Israeli strike, they weigh as usual. I know it's hard to believe. They way overblew how effective it was, you know. I have this honest suspicion because they do, the Iran has come out and said, you know, they had these, some of their senior military officials and stuff got killed in one of the strikes. And I suspect that they wanted those people out of the way because they said these guys were at a meeting. Man, you know, Israel's fixing to attack you and you know what they do. These targeted attacks where they try to assassinate people and all that. And you tell these guys, imagine you're one of these guys. And the government calls you up in the midst of this, and you know Israel's probably going to launch an attack at any minute, and you probably on one of their kill lists, and you get a call from the president or the Ayatollah, whoever, and they're like, yeah, it's 7 p.m. tonight. We need you to attend a meeting. We need you to attend a meeting at this one location. And you feel like you got to go. And you hear them bombs coming in. Now, the Iranian response is, I think it's going to be kind of like last time. They launch these missiles, make a point, blow up some stuff in Israel, and then everything kind of chill out again. And the reason for that, the reason I don't think the Iranians are going to, you know, really go full bore in here, is because if they were going to do that, if they were going to go ahead and finally acknowledge that these attacks by Israel are what they are, which is an act of war, and fight a war, then the minute the first Israeli ordnance was launched and crossed over their border, then they would have immediately released just wave after wave of missiles and hit them. They didn't. They waited till Israel was done doing their thing and then raised the flag and made dire warnings about their response and all of that and then sent missiles back. So I think this is going to kind of be more of the same. In other words, I think people, they're getting hysterical that all-out war is breaking out in the Middle East. I think you're jumping the gun a little bit. I don't necessarily think that's right. Like I say, now, if the first Israeli missile would have crossed their border and they launched half of what they got and started trying to wipe Israel, I'd say, yeah, it's on now. They're done playing. But they didn't do that. They did the usual thing. Let Israel get all done. Make their press statements, raise their flags, talk about this and that. And then they've launched their missiles kind of like they did last time and made their point why Israel said they shot them all down, just like Ukraine does. We shot them all down. Never mind these blown up buildings, all these videos of missiles landing everywhere. I saw one person comment on the internet somewhere. I don't even remember what I saw, but they were in Israel and they're like, well, this is outrageous. They're targeting civilians. We never do that after Gaza. Really? You have the nerve. And this brings us to the point where I want to tie all this together. And because going back over here to the protest that I put over on the back burner, and up here, back here on the front burner, where we're going to mix everything together. I see people talking about these protests and even questioning and pointing out the fact that this shit's so staged. It's obviously staged. And they're asking the question, why? What are they? I see people asking the question, why? What does this accomplish? And I keep coming back to, if these weren't going on, I believe we would be seeing, we were already seeing protests, you know, not of this scale because they weren't organized on that level. But we're already seeing protests against Israel because of their genocide of the Palestinians. Now with this attack on Iran, which they started, we would be having probably more fervent anti-Israel protests. And yet these quote unquote ICE protests have sucked all the oxygen out of the room. What would have otherwise been anti-Israel protests? It's just sucked all the oxygen out of the room. I think that's one of the big contributing factors of why, of answering the why. It sucked all the oxygen out of what normally would have been anti-Israel protests. Now they got people over here protesting crap that nobody cares about. It's so obvious. You know, I know y'all see it. If I see it, I know y'all see it. I'm not some super intelligent person. I'm just a regular person like the rest of you. It's so damn obvious. It's not, I don't see this stuff because I'm so super smart. I see this stuff because it's so damn obvious. How can you not? I don't know. Anyway, a final point I guess I want to make is, remember, as you look at all of this stuff, I've said this before, but it bears repeating, because the vast majority of people don't understand war. They don't understand, you know, nation-state conflicts. They tend to make them like their personal thing, you know, like they're at the honky-tonk and somebody done, you know, started talking smack and swung at them, you know. Or they in the hood and somebody done disrespect them. They're going to, you know, bust a cap, as it were. Dump a mag, or however you say. Empty the clip. I don't know. I'm not up on all the terminology. But people make the mistake of personalizing this, and they think war is whoever kicks the other guy's ass wins. And then I've said this before, we did a show on it. It's not. When you're talking about nation-state conflicts, wars, it's about achieving political ends. Well, that's it. A good example was when Israel attacked Lebanon and Hezbollah. Before they did that, they went to Hezbollah and asked them to quit supporting the Palestinians. And, you know, I mean, that was their goal. You know, they didn't agree to that. So if they would have agreed to that, there would have been no attack. The attack was to stop their support of the Palestinians. Simple as. I mean, there's more aspects to it than that. But that boiled down to its most simple nature element. That's what we're talking about. These conflicts are about achieving political ends. It doesn't matter how many people they kill. Sadly, I mean, it does matter. It doesn't matter to them. And that doesn't, I'm not just applying that to Israel. I mean, that's all nation states when there's a conflict. Who knows how many Vietnamese the U.S. government slaughtered? I mean, there's a number out there, but come on, do you think every village that they napalmed and killed everybody, they went and took a body count? They killed countless Vietnamese, but who won the conflict? You see, that didn't matter. You hear people excuse or be like, we still won. The government wouldn't let us. We killed a ton of them. We. Not me, buddy. I didn't kill nobody. I ain't got no desire to go around killing people. It's not that. Who achieved their political ends? Well, in the end, the U.S. fled and the South Vietnamese took over the country. So political goals achieved. It doesn't matter the number who took the most casualties on each side, who's achieving their political goals. That's what nation state conflicts are. Now, you look at this then, because people be like, man, I see shills on the internet and they'd be like, you know, man, Iran looks weak. This was before they launched their missiles back. Iran's so weak, man. Why don't they just be, they don't do anything. Why aren't they doing something? Because it's not about somebody disrespect you on the streets. It's about they're trying to achieve their political goals. So they're doing this measured response. Why? Well, this tells you, we don't know the nuances, but what this does tell you is Iran is behaving much like Russia and China in this aspect, that as though time is on their side. They're running out the clock. This is it's like they're playing prevent defense if you're an NFL fan, American football fan. They're playing prevent defense. In other words, you look at Iran and the way they're approaching these endless provocations by Israel, and they're playing prevent defense. They're obviously running the clock out. Israel, on the other hand, keeps launching provocation after provocation after provocation after provocation. This tells us that they, on some level or another, believe the clock is not on their side. Time is not on their side. Now, this is not, otherwise they could just chill out. And if the Iranian regime was on the brink of collapse, they could sit back and chill and just wait for that to happen. But they're not doing that, are they? Now, there is the, I don't want to say the wild card element in Israel's behavior. I think there is a wild card in that this is the only thing keeping Netanyahu out of prison. So on a personal level, Netanyahu is personally motivated to keep this going as long as possible. But yeah, they're not behaving as though time is on their side on this, are they? Remember, this isn't a barroom fight. This isn't, you know, somebody's mouthed off to you one time's too many or took a swing at you. This is about achieving political goals. And when you keep it in that context, you can see which side acts like time is on their side and which side does not. And when you link this back, and we got to get into the Christian specifics, I need to wrap this up. But when you link this back, what we were talking about earlier, about Israel's not even a real nation because it relies on outside support. If the clock is running out on that outside support coming, not because of political will, they've got the politicians bought and paid for, on the just literal ability to do that because of economic problems and societal unrest and whatnot, then that would explain why they're kind of being frantic and trying to do all of these things now while they can. In other words, when time's on one side, you kind of turn into a battle of attrition. Whichever side has time on its side has got the stronger position of achieving their political goals. We got to get into the Christian specific segment. We're going to wind up running long. We don't run low here. We're running long. I can tell it, but that's okay. We'll keep it interesting. It'll be a fun discussion. Do you know what to do? Let's get in there and fill those pieces. Let's get into this week's Christian specific segment at the Parish of the Patriots. Now, it's no secret that the educational system, the school system in this country, here in the U.S., and I'm sure it's throughout the West, the one thing it does not do is promote critical thinking. This is not some breathtaking announcement here. It's just pretty common knowledge. What does it do? It teaches conformity. It teaches memorization. I said this on a previous show, but one of the things I came to realize in this journey through life, and I'm sure many of you have as well, is that, you know, people that once upon a time we looked at and thought, you know, because they were well-educated, they had degrees in certain fields, we assumed that meant they were really smart. Now, of course, that's not to disqualify and say that there aren't smart academic people, not at all, but we're just speaking in the general term. In other words, somebody being well-educated in the school system does not equate to them necessarily being smart. You have to look, this is another one of those cases where by their fruits you will know them. You got to look at, you know, listen to what they say, listen to the context, and don't be afraid to be critical and ask yourself, well, is this person, you know, really exercising some critical thinking, or are they just simply regurgitating what they read somewhere? Where I'm going with this is I was thinking the other day, we all know that the education system does not encourage critical thinking. It encourages memorization and structure and rigidity. No thinking outside of the box allowed. In fact, in the education system, it's discouraged at the least, and sometimes it's even punished. And while this isn't new, education system is not the only system that does that. A lot of preachers do this as well, preachers and teachers. Now, I'm speaking primarily, obviously, from a Protestant point of view here, so I guess I should make that clear. But I've seen over my lifetime, I've seen many preachers and teachers who do the exact same thing. And this will usually come about in the form of basically an admonition. Don't question it. Don't question it. How many times, and I'm sure you have as well, how many times have you heard a preacher or teacher, if you ask them a question, feel like, well, I don't understand it. Why would God do this? Why would God do that? And you'll get an answer along the lines of, it's not for us to ask these questions. You just don't question it. In fact, usually there'll be kind of a ominous warning mixed in there that God will get angry because you're questioning him. If they can't go to their memorization bank, you know, this is why I referenced the education system, which is just a memorization program. You know, if they can't pull up from their memorization a Bible quote to answer you that they think will cover their bases, they would just fall back on, don't question it. And in fact, you're questioning God himself, and you risk getting in trouble. This could be avoided, by the way. Pride plays a role in this as well, because if you don't know, just say, I don't know. Look, yeah, I'm never ashamed to say, look, I don't know. I'm going to lie. Sometimes y'all have written me questions and I wind up, I guess I'm guilty of the same thing. I just fumble through it. At least don't say don't ask. But I've fumbled it. There's been times I've answered stuff and then later I'm like, I don't think I did that good a job. And then later on after that, I finally figure out an answer. And I look back and I'm like, well, I totally fumbled that. I'm trying to do better to just say, I don't know. Pride comes into play because you're a respected preacher and a teacher in a church somewhere, and one of your parishioners comes up and asks you a question about the Bible or a concept from the Bible or something they heard. They don't understand. And you don't know. You go to your memorization that you got in seminary school, and you can't pull up something to regurgitate back to make you look smart. And so what happened is they'll just basically give you an answer of well, don't ask. Don't ask. Don't question it. God might get angry because you're questioning. You just got to understand. You got to trust that God knows what he's doing. Don't ask. Don't ask and don't question. This is as far from the truth as anything. One of our primary roles here is to question. Don't ever let a preacher, teacher, somebody in religious authority tell you, don't question it. If they do tell you that, you need to hear that as them saying, I don't know, and being too prideful to just admit, I don't know. And I get it. You know, you're a preacher, you got a church, you got a congregation that shows up and shakes your hand at the door every day. And somebody comes and asks you something, and you're looked upon with authority, you're looked upon as the resident expert on all things biblical and spiritual. And you don't want to say, I don't know. Understandable. Because then people are going to be like, well, why are you the preacher? I thought you were the preacher. Because people being what they are, instead of respecting that answer, because we don't know everything. Not, I sure don't. We don't know everything, but people expect us to. And that's because in that situation, your parishioners don't want to put the work in themselves. Somebody walks up to their preacher after church, shaking his hand at the door and says, preacher, I got a question about the Bible. And again, the preacher doesn't want to say, I don't know. And the other person wants a quick answer. They want the preacher to be their spiritual Google or whatever. Spiritual DuckDuckGo, spiritual Yandex, whatever. They want to be a search engine and give them a quick answer. Because they don't want to put the work in. If they really are that curious as to answer, you know, pray on it. Read the Bible, pray, try to figure it out. Question the world around and come to an answer. Now, they don't want to put that much work in. They want to go to the preacher and they want the preacher to give an answer. And if the preacher were to say, I don't know, then why the hell is this guy here? He's supposed to make life convenient for me. This is the dynamic you find yourself dealing with. But when any preacher and teacher tells you, don't question it. You don't question what God is. Do not question. Let me tell you something. Do not question what God is doing. That's not the answer. One of the things we are here to do is to question. How are you going to learn if you don't question? Why would God get angry? God gives us these various things to understand him. If you think, well, you're just saying that. How do I know? Well, if you are a parent and you as a father have your children, you know, your son is out there with you while you're working on something and he's asking you, well, why are you doing that? I see you changing this part out. I see you digging this hole to put a post in the ground. Why are you doing that? What are you trying to accomplish? Are you going to get angry at them? I'm not talking about when they just being annoying and just, what is this? What is this? How's it? You know, because they all go through that spell. I'm not talking about that spell all these kids go through when they're little, when everything is, why is this? How come? How come? Why? How come? How come? I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about if your child is asking you legitimate questions about why you're doing the things you do, how are you doing it? How are you going to make that happen? How is this? Do you get angry at them for being interested in what you're doing? You're out there, you're with your kid, and your kid is showing an interest in what you're doing. They're out there with you to begin with. They're not laying in the house playing a video game or just barricaded in their room. They're out there with you. They're interested in what you're up to. They don't understand what you're doing. And they start asking you, well, why are you doing this? How are you going to accomplish that? How does that work? I see you doing this. What is that? Is your reaction to get angry? How dare you question anything I do? Get in the house before I beat your ass. No, you don't do that. If anything, you're happy. They want to know. They're looking to you as an authority figure. They're looking to you because they assume, of course, you know, assuming they haven't hit the teenage years yet, they're little kids. You are like the all-knowing being of the world. They're confident in asking that you know the answer. You don't get angry, do you? You do your best to answer them. You may not give them a detailed explanation. Why wouldn't you do that? Because you understand this is a small child and they're not going to understand. If you're working on rebuilding the carburetor on your project car and, you know, your 5, 6, 7-year-old son is out there with you, you're not going to start explaining to him the concept of, you know, the mechanics and the concepts of fuel rate, air fuel ratio, and how a carburetor works. You'll give him a general rundown of it because you understand he's a child. He's not going to get it. You're just going to overwhelm him if you give him the minutiae of how a carburetor works. But you can tell him, well, this is how the gas goes in the engine. And we got to make sure the amount of gas is right. So we're changing these jets out. We got to set the floats because it fills up like a bowl. You know, son, like in a toilet. They can understand that. Get into, you know, the actual minutiae, the details of how a carburetor works. They're going to be overwhelmed. So you don't give them the full answer. You see what I'm saying? God gives us these experiences so we understand him. He interacts with us the same way. They're going to get mad at you because you have questions. That's the whole point. If you don't ever question anything, you're barricaded in your room and not having anything to do with what your father is up to. Another part, a facet of this response that will sometimes come along with this is something along the lines of, if it's not in the Bible, then you don't need to know about it. Because if you're like, well, why is it wrong for me to quote you? Well, if it's not in the Bible, you don't need to know about it. There are several things wrong with that. For one thing, it probably is in the Bible. It's just, again, your preacher, your teacher, whatever. You know, he's going to the memorization thing that he went through in seminary school or whatever, and he can't pull it up. And he's not really sure where to even go look. And so, in their mind, that equates to, it's not in the Bible. If I can't remember it, it's not in the Bible. And if it's not in the Bible, don't question it. Look, we have so many resources to learn about God. The creation, this world. I've said this several times now. If you want to learn about the artist, you look at the work of art. People that, you know, these people of the world who are, I said this on a recent show, you ever notice all of their artwork is always some satanic thing? That tells you about the artist, doesn't it? They never create a work of art that is something beautiful. It's always something disgusting, revolting, and satanic in nature. That tells you about the, you don't have to know what their background is. I don't have to know anything about the personal details of the artists themselves. If their work of art is always depicts something blasphemous, satanic, brutal, ugly, that's all I need to know. I already know about the artist. They are telling me who they are through their work of art. God has given us this entire creation, this world, this plane of existence that we live on, as a part of, we can understand him by understanding this creation and the things and how it works, the nature of the world we live in. We understand the artist by what he has created, the designer, the architect, however you want to think of it. There's so many methods. There's so many things through which we can learn about God. As I pointed out a while ago, if you're a parent, if you're blessed with being a parent, your interactions with your children teach you about God. And it can also temper what you do. When you get frustrated with your children, take a moment and think, well, wait a minute. What about those times I have essentially acted just like what my child is acting like now towards God? Getting mad and throwing a tantrum because he's not giving you what you want, what you think you just got to have. Why isn't he doing that? Instead of being appreciative for what he's giving you, you've thrown a tantrum at God. And now when your own child is doing that, what you get, you getting upset. You see, there's so many things, so many ways to learn about the Lord. Now, the Bible is our handbook. You know, I mean, this is our reference. And it is something, it's an ongoing thing. I don't care who anybody is, you're never going to understand and know everything that's in the Bible. I don't care how many times you read it. You're just not. Every time you read it, you're going to hit passages and you're going to get something else out of it. Here on the show, how many times have we read the same passages and come away with new meanings? It doesn't mean the other things we came away with were incorrect. It's so deep. And this comes back to, the Bible has to be understood. It is a spiritual book and it has to be understood in the spirit. If you just simply read it word for word and try to use, you know, your physical reasoning to understand, it's not going to make any sense. At best, you're going to misinterpret a lot of what you read. And at worst, it's just going to come across as a bunch of gibberish that doesn't make any sense at all. Instead of getting the mindset, well, I look for the answer, it's not in the Bible, think of it as, it probably is, you just haven't found it yet. But as you go through your Bible study, routine, ritual, which I hope you could set some time aside every day. It doesn't have to be a lot. set some time aside every day to read some from your Bible. Eventually, over the years, you're going to probably, I can assure you, more than likely, you're going to find that answer. You may not find it right away, but you'll find that answer. And you may find it in your Bible, or you may find it in a combination of your Bible and your experiences and things you look around to understand in the world around you. You will usually find the answer you're looking for. Maybe not right away, but again, you will find it. We are here to question. This is a part of what we're supposed to be doing, learning and growing spiritually. How are you going to do that? If you just don't question it, God will get mad if you question him. The problem, and I guess I should add a footnote here, arguing and throwing a tantrum is not questioning. You know, if your questioning is essentially arguing with God and on some level or another attempting to say he's wrong, now that's not constructive. That's missing the mark. You know, that turns into a sin, missing the mark, coming up short, because now you're getting it twisted. Questioning, trying to understand from an earnest perspective, there's nothing wrong with that. If you just simply don't like what God is doing and now you're throwing a temper tantrum over it and trying to say he somehow is coming up short, he somehow doesn't get it. Something else to be careful about in your prayers. Again, I encourage everybody in your Christian growth to always strive to have time set aside for your Bible and for prayer, thinking about the Lord. You know, your prayer doesn't have to necessarily mean being on your knees and your hands folded up and praying to God. It can be praise. It can be simply reflecting on the things you just read in the Bible and trying to understand them and reaching out and hoping that the Holy Spirit will guide you in this. The one thing you don't want to fall into in your prayer is to catch yourself over and over trying, essentially trying to explain it to God. Make sure he gets it. Make sure he understands. You know, there's nothing wrong with speaking what your concerns are, or speaking what you seek from the Lord. But as it is written, he already knows what you need before you say anything. Don't be like the heathen who thinks they're going to be saved by blabbering a bunch of words. Quit trying to explain it to him. He already knows. You speak it out loud more for your own sake than his. You're not explaining it to him. Understand, always keep it in mind. You're not explaining. When you fall into that trap, and I speak from experience, when you fall into that trap, stop. Quit trying to explain it to him. He already gets it. I gotta make sure God understands. This is really important to me. Don't do that. He gets it. This is where faith comes in. Go ahead and speak it. Understand, by speaking it out loud to him, you know, that's probably more for you than it is for him. You're not explaining anything. Stop that. You're not explaining it for him. As you go through life, this is kind of shift. We're shifting into another subject, but we can roll with this because I had this written down too, and I think I want to get this wedged just in here because it is kind of related. But as you go through life and you do spiritually mature and you do learn things, God also teaches us. This is where humility comes into play. Now, I talked a while ago about, you know, your preacher don't want to say, he don't want to tell you. I don't know. Because then you might, you know, question why does he have a job here? Inevitably, you what do you think of as the opposite of humility? Pride. You know, pride. And humility comes into play as you spiritually grow. Sins you've committed and foolishness you have walked in, you don't want to forget those things. You might want to because you look back and it's cringe that you were so wrong. But it's important to remember that. As you go along, you know, you can look at people sometimes. And I say, you can't. I can. This is confession on my part. You look at how people in general behave and things they do and stuff. And like for me personally, I'm just doing a personal thing. A lot of times I look at my fellow man out here in the world and I'm just taken aback by how stupid people are. I really am. And that sounds horrible. A prideful statement. And it is. It's a sinful attitude to take. But it's something I struggle with. I look at people in general. And I know y'all know where I'm coming from. Y'all, if y'all being honest, you know where I'm coming from. You look and it's like, how are people so freaking stupid? You know, they orchestrate these narratives and people just fall for them over and over and over again. And it's like nobody stops to think. Hey, they lied to us about all these other things. And they just keep falling for it. You know? And it can be real easy to look around and think, you know, I know, you know, I'm supposed to have this love of the Lord for my fellow man in my heart, but damn, people are stupid. This is where humility comes into play and the sins we have committed. And you look back, and if you're being honest, we say, well, yeah, I remember when I was cringy and stupid too. That's part of the experience. Don't ever forget that. You know, it's all great. Praise the Lord, you're carrying out His will in your life, His plan, by spiritually maturing, learning, understanding things now. But don't forget when you weren't there. Don't forget back when you was basically in spiritual first grade and you didn't really understand, but you kind of thought you did, but you didn't. When you look around at people out here falling for the same satanic traps over and over and over again, and it's easy to sit here and scratch your head and go, damn, people are dumb. I don't know. Maybe they kind of deserve what they get. Stop and remember. You know, we've heard that saying, there but for the grace of God would go I. You know, somebody see a homeless person and they say, don't look down on that person because they a drug addict and, you know, whatever the hell else. And now they're homeless. If it wasn't for God, you could be that person too. And you sit around and go, well, yeah, that's all well and good, but I still wouldn't have no plans to do drugs and be homeless. It's kind of a, you know, like the insinuation was, if it wasn't for God, you'd gone and stuck a needle in your arm or fired up a spoon and smoked crack and you'd be homeless too. God's the only thing that kept you from sucking on a crack pipe. And you're kind of like, no, I guess give God glory for everything, but you know, I don't have any desire to smoke a crack pipe and wind up homeless. A more proper version of that saying. I'm going to give you the proper version. Not if, but for the grace of God, there go I. Because I have no intention. I would never have the intention to smoke a crack pipe and thus wind up a druggie laid out on the sidewalk being homeless. That's not to say everybody is homeless like that. Y'all know what I'm saying. Anyway. No, a more proper and correct view of that saying is there when you look at people at their different levels, spiritual understanding. If we're honest with ourselves, there, but for the grace of God, went I. We ain't talking about homeless people now. There, but for the grace of God, went I. I remember when I was there. You look at me like, damn, people are stupid. They really. But if you're honest and you're humble, you look back and go, yeah, I remember when I was just that dumb. Hell, you can look back and remember when you thought the same thing they do, that you're sitting here looking at them and go, how can they be so stupid and not understand this? And you being honest. And you look back and you say, yeah, I remember when I was so dumb, I thought that too. I mean, it's great now that I don't think that anymore. But you know, these people haven't progressed. And that's where the humility comes in. You see, even your mistakes, your ignorance, your sin plays a role in your spiritual growth. It's not an excuse for sin, but it does play a role in your spiritual growth because you carry that with you, that experience. You learn from it. That's how it's supposed to work. You learn from your mistakes, right? And you carry those things with you, not as a burden, not as something you periodically whip out and beat yourself up over, but as a counterbalance to any sort of pride, any sort of temptation to start puffing yourself up like you really somebody. Paul wrote about this, in the Bible. He talked about, being careful not to puff himself up, giving the glory to God. There, but for the grace of God, went I. I remember when I believed that ignorant stuff. Praise God in the name of Jesus that I don't, he instructed me. I've come to a greater understanding. But when you look out here at all these people running around believing silly things, foolish tales, things made up in men's heads, misinterpretations of the Bible, so on and so forth. Instead of just shrugging your shoulders and saying, damn, people are stupid. What a waste of time. There, but for the grace of God, went I. I remember when I believed stuff just as stupid. I remember when I believed literally the same thing they do. Come to a greater understanding. Be grateful. Be humble. There, but for the grace of God, went I. Okay, we're going to wrap up on that note. Hope you got something out of the show, especially this part of it. I think it's the most important. It is the most important part for me. I do appreciate it. We got Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson will be back tomorrow with the Orthodox Nationalist Show. He'll be back on Thursday to wrap up our week here at Radio Albion. We do 4 days a week. We used to do five, but I got tired of all that. Sven will be back at some point in time. He'll be back. We're all looking forward to it. The quality of programming will no doubt increase. But I do hope you'll get a chance to check out the rest of our content here on Radio Albion this week. I hope you have a great week. And of course, as always, I hope I'll see you back here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.